Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show, the show that takes the mystery out of spirituality with your host, David Gagan. Engineer, science director, scholarly researcher of life's mysteries, and author of The Endless Journey.
Welcome to the Common Sense Spirituality Show. I'm host Dave Gagan, and today's show is titled Power of Thoughts. Please note that all the chat board questions will be answered on both the chat board as well as posted on my website within a day or so of the show. We encourage and welcome your questions. Thought is the most powerful force in existence. The universal consciousness created the cosmos through thought, and we are part of the universal consciousness. So we too have great powers. All we need to do is to learn how to use our mind more effectively. Our guest today is Nora Nadrich, author of Says Who, One Simple Question Can Change the Way You Think Forever. Nora is a certified life coach and mindfulness meditation teacher. She was an actress, screenwriter, working in film, television, and commercials, until she changed to study and focus her efforts on cognitive behavioral therapy. Nora Nadrich, welcome to the show, Nora.
Hi, David. Thank you for having me.
Hey, it's great to have you here. Now, you wrote a book recently called Says Who, as I mentioned a moment ago. What was the inspiration for that book?
Well, the original inspiration for that book happened long ago. I had a family incident that was very devastating. And as a result of that incident, I went into fight or flight. Excuse me, when we go into fight or flight, a lot of thoughts rush to the foreground of our mind. And one thought in particular took hold. And it really stayed with me for quite a long time. I didn't realize the power that it had over me because I had buried it pretty much in my subconscious. And it wasn't until a couple of years later that I realized I had been at the effect of this thought. It had literally penetrated and permeated my life very significantly. This was the power of that particular thought. I went on a deep psycho-spiritual journey to investigate the workings of the mind. And years later, when I became a certified life coach, I had, you know, worked through and reconnected to this thought, to meet it face to face, to see what was this thought that had such power over me. When I became a life coach, I started to see a very familiar pattern in my clients, or some of them definitely, in that one client in particular came to me, and she was what I call a woman of two minds. She had come to me with a very positive trajectory that she was on to share with this new business that she had started, when all of a sudden during the session, she blurted out something that was the complete antithesis of where she was at. And it was very negative. It was very fear-based. And basically what it was that she said she was going to be homeless. And it was incredibly odd, really, because it had nothing to do with what was going on right then and there, presently in her life. And when she said that to me, I immediately identified it. I thought, this is a thought that she has been carrying around. This isn't a thought that just popped out of nowhere. I believed with certainty, you know, my intuition felt very strong that this was a thought that she had gotten somewhere. And at that moment, I had an aha revelation, and it was, says who? And I said to her, says who? Who is saying this thought in your mind? Who is telling you that you are going to be homeless? Well, this just stopped her dead in her tracks. And this was a question that was never proposed to her. And by me asking this question, which turned into a very emotional session for her, she had connected something that she had stuffed down for many, many years in her life, that this was a thought that her father had had when she was growing up. He had gone from job to job to job. He was very frightened about he and the family living out of their car, being homeless, basically. And it used to petrify her as a little girl. So she had taken that thought on as her own and didn't realize that it was a thought that she'd carried with her way into adulthood.
That's fascinating. Mm. So it kind of popped into your head, but it really didn't. Maybe the words did, But the concept had been broiling around in there for quite a while. You used the word fight or flight as a thought. What do you mean by that? Explain what that thought is.
For my particular, when I had the thought that a very frightening thought that came up for me based on the incident that I described early in my life, I went into fear. I went into a fear state. And when we go into a fear state, what happens to us? We go into what's called a fight or flight. Okay. You know, we feel very shaken, our heart starts to beat fast, our palms can get sweaty. And basically the essence of fight or flight is that we feel that our survival is being threatened.
Yeah.
And that's the state that we go in.
Now you say in your book that there's a danger in believing your negative thoughts about yourself because it leads to actually becoming that person. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yes. I say in my book that thoughts create emotions, create behavior, creates reality. I mean, that is usually the connect the dots of our thoughts. And believing a thought that is negative without questioning it, without investigating it to find out if it's real or not, can really escalate into something that can be, you know, very alarming and very concerning and even dangerous. It can become destructive. And that is really the progression of a negative or fear-based thought if it isn't understood and if we don't have this ability to basically deconstruct or to understand a thought that has such a hold on us that's very negative, it can cause us to do all sorts of things, as we know. I mean, the far extreme behavior of a negative thought is anything from hurting ourselves to hurting others.
Is it because like attracts like? If you get positive thoughts, you get positive things happen to you.
I do believe that, David. I do believe that as a theory and as a formula. I think positive thoughts beget positive thoughts, and negative thoughts, if again they're not stopped in their tracks, creates an energy of more negativity. I mean, it's all energy, isn't it? So basically, yeah, if you don't stop a negative thought, it will create more negative thoughts, which will create more negative behavior.
Are thoughts things?
I think everything are things, are energy and matter that become things, that become concrete, tangible things that we experience in our life. Yes.
Yeah. I think so too. I think thoughts are things because we're just energy. You know, that's really
Absolutely.
What we are.
Right.
And so are thoughts. I mean, you can have mental telepathy. You can send thoughts to people. I'm sure you've sat in the car. And sure, our listeners have too. And you know, you're riding along, and all of a sudden, somebody else in the car says something that you're thinking about that has nothing to do with anything anywhere.
Absolutely, yes, David, that's so true, and I completely believe in that. And that in itself shows you the power of thought,
yeah,
right?
It really does.
If it has a telepathic component to it,
right.
Then
it's real.
It's so real.
Real.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You're probably not a college wrestling fan. My wife and I. My wife and I are, but she said last night that there's a guy named Kyle Dake, and if you're not a fan, you don't know him, but he's an amazing wrestler, and he was the only wrestler to ever win a national championship at four different weights. You can only win four of them: freshman, sophomore, junior, and senior. Mm-hmm. And he has a very positive attitude. And somebody asked him at the interview last night, how he could be so positive. And he said that every time he gets a negative thought, he stops in his tracks and forces himself to have five positive thoughts.
Right. Yeah. Pretty, which is great. And that's a great formula. I mean, excuse me, he's figured out a system for himself that works. And the says who method is a series of seven questions that you ask yourself to very much do the same thing. It's a little more in depth in that it really helps you even be able to discern if a thought is real or not. Do you know? Because a lot of thoughts are not our own, and we've taken on thoughts that belong to other people or what we've been inundated with, and it turns into our belief system. So yes, you're describing his way of doing it is sounds like it works really well for him.
I'll tell you.
Yeah, really, you know, based on the success he had. And that's the thing. That's what we need. We need a practice. We need a discipline. We need a toolkit. You know, what I say, David, about Says Who is this isn't a book about, oh, hey, let's just think positive thoughts and positive thoughts will keep on happening. That would be great if that were true, but it's not. We think somewhere between between 40 and 70,000 thoughts a day.
Amazing.
And a lot of those thoughts, I mean, isn't that amazing? A lot of those thoughts, depending on each person, some more than others, don't serve our well-being. And they can be very negative. So, you know, it's really helpful to have something to work with. I call the Says Who method something to have in your toolkit so that if a negative thought comes up, which they will, they invariably will. What do you do when that happens? And, yeah. You know, again, the wrestler has his technique. Says Who is mine.
Now, why don't we go through, this is probably a good point, to go through the key steps in your methodology, because I thought it was pretty clever, quite frankly, and I think it'll help a lot of people.
Thank you. Well, first and foremost, what I suggest is to become the observer of your thoughts. And what I mean by that, for those that really, you know, that sounds like an intellectual concept, you know, what does it mean to be a witness, to be an observer of your own thinking mind? And that is, look at what thoughts produce. They produce a lot of reactions in us. So a thought comes up, we get angry, we get mad, we get triggered. So what I suggest is, when a thought comes up that feels like it's got a lot of energy on it, good, bad, or indifferent, be with it, observe it. Be the observer, like you're the witness standing outside of yourself and say, oh, I'm having this thought. So with the Says Who method, the very first question is, says who? Who is saying this thought in my mind? If you recognize it as you are the thinker of that thought, then you would say, I am. I am thinking that I, and I'll use an example of a negative thought, that I am worthless. I am the one that is thinking that I am worthless. Okay, that's owning it. That's being with it. And in mindfulness, which I also teach, is can you be with something, be in present moment awareness with non-judgment if you can. Be with it. Just, again, be the observer. The second
Now, the observer as opposed to the reactor, right?
Exactly. And I say that in the book, be the observer instead of the reactor. We all know how easy it is to be a reactor, do you know? And the more you become the observer, the less you become the reactor. And you can, it's again, it's like, okay, I'm having this thought. I feel really plugged in right now. Let me look at it. Let me be with it. Let me see what it's about. Let me see what it wants for me. I am not my thought. I'm having a thought. This is happening right now. Yes, it feels real, but do I need it to just drag me around like I'm a dog on a leash? Or am I in control of this thought? Can I decide what I want to do with this thought, whether I want to keep it and accept it? So the six questions that follow that really give you, the second one being, is this your thought or have you heard someone else say it before? And like what I described with my client, she was at the effect for most of her life of a thought that didn't even belong to her, a thought that belonged to her father. And who knows who it belonged to before her father? I mean, sometimes it is our original thoughts, and they do come up in our own mind and begin with us. And sometimes they began with somebody else, and we took that thought on as our own and believed it to be true. So that's the first two steps of the Says Who method.
Okay. Why don't we keep going?
Okay, and
what's three?
So three basically is when you decide those two things, says who is saying this thought in my mind, it's me. If it's not you, the second question will ring true. Is this your original thought or have you heard someone say this before? Your aha moment can be, hey, you know what? I have heard someone else say this thought before. And this is how it made me feel when I heard it. And I remember, I mean, I have people that I've worked with that remember something that was told to them at 5 years old that was negative and mean and frightening. And they go right back to remembering who said it and when, whether it's a bully on the schoolyard in third grade. Do you know?
Yeah.
So that's very helpful to know whether it's your thought or it's not your thought. The third question is, do I like this thought? I mean, these are very logical, very straightforward questions. This is not rocket scientist. It's not a big mystery. And it's not going to be making you bend over backwards to answer these questions. They're very, I call it simple wisdom. So the question, do I like this thought? I've had clients, I had one particular client who was really caught up in her negative story. And she was going on and on and on, which is what I call being on the hamster wheel. And, you know, a lot of those people, you try to reach them and they're like, yeah, but, I call it the yeah, buts. And when I was talking to her, I did the method on her and she was really, really caught up in this negative narrative. And I said to her, do you like that thought? Well, that stopped her again, right in her tracks. And she took a couple of seconds and she said, no, I don't like this thought. As a matter of fact, I hate this thought. I hate this thought. And I said, okay, so you hate this thought that you're thinking, and yet you want to keep thinking a thought that you hate. You know, just sit with that. It's like, why am I thinking a thought that I hate so much? Do you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So there's that, which keeps you going. And the next thought after that is, does this thought make me feel better? Well, if you're having a thought that you hate, I doubt very much it's right. Making you feel better.
Highly unlikely.
So again, it's like, no, actually it's making me feel worse or making me feel horrible or making me feel miserable or making me feel depressed or making me feel like I don't want to live anymore. I mean, it's endless. What a question like, does this thought make you feel better, where it can take you. The next question being, does this thought work for you? Well, clearly it does not, okay? Because if you have all those feelings about a negative thought that is just bringing you down and diminishing you and making you feel bad and making you feel horrible about yourself, hello, clearly it's not working for you. And if it's not working for you, then you recognize that. And if a real negative thought is working for you, then tell me how it's working for you. In what positive ways is that thought working for you? Well, I've yet to have somebody tell me how a negative thought is working for them favorably.
Right.
And the question after that is, question six is, does this thought have power over you? And boy, do we know that many of those negative thoughts have a lot of power over us. We feel helpless and hopeless and feel such despair because this thought is really weighing on us heavily. And again, the results, what I call the symptoms of that thought, is a feeling like feeling depressed and hopeless and futility and feeling anxiety and all those things. So if you feel that way, then you're at the effect of that thought. And yes, that thought is having power over you. And you recognize it. This is all step-by-step realizations. And you go easy on yourself and do not judge yourself in the process. You are opening this up. You are doing little thought surgery here. The final question, David, is, are you ready to let this thought go? And that is really the culmination of all those questions, that when you have the realization that you don't like this thought, that it does not make you feel better, that it does not work for you, that it makes you feel helpless and hopeless and all of the things that we described, that you, at this moment, as the thinker of that thought, because you are creating your thoughts, that you have the power to let it go. And by making that announcement, to make that declaration to yourself and out into the universe, I am ready to let this thought go. I am done with it. That's it. I don't need it to have control over me anymore. I, again, am in control of it. You can let it go.
You know, that's the thing I think that people will ask themselves. How do I really let it go? Especially, you know, you're lying there at night, you're in bed, right? You got something bugging you, and you know, how do you get it out of your mind? Is it, can you clearly just say, you know, this isn't working for me, I can let
you
it can, go?
You, the repetition, like almost having a mantra. You know, I have another chapter in my book called Release and Replace. So if you can, again, this is a muscle. It's like, again, you mentioned the wrestler. He tells himself five things that are positive. If someone said to me, hey, you know, hey, Aura, I did the method and boy, that thought just came bouncing right back. I'd say, do it again and do it again and do it again and then replace that thought. I mean, there's a couple of things that I can suggest is you replace that thought, I am worthless with, I am not worthless. And if you're lying in bed, which, you know, is you're about to go into a sleep state and you want that to go into your subconscious, I would say close your eyes. And, you know, take a couple of breaths in and out, get relaxed, feel yourself really dropping into deep relaxation, and let your mantra be, I am very worthy. I am very worthy. I am good enough. I mean, you counter it with positive thoughts. That's the replacing. You are creating these thoughts. You are the architect. You are the designer. Have fun with it. Make your thoughts be whatever you want them to be. You know, give yourself permission. And again, it's practice. It's a discipline. And if you keep doing it, you will catch your negative thoughts in their tracks and you will stop them in their tracks and say, hey, wait a minute. Oh, no, no, no. I'm in control here. It's not controlling me. And just to throw this in is what I mentioned in the book as an example, and it seems to be very effective to people. I say, if you had an imposter, if you had somebody who was coming onto your property and they just came on, you know, walked over a wall or your gate or just, you know, an intruder, they just came onto your property, what are you going to say? Oh, hey, come on in. Come on, you know, welcome. You say, get off my property. You don't belong here. And I use that analogy that negative thoughts are like intruders, imposters. You have to tell them to go, that they don't belong there.
Yeah, I like your thoughts on replacing them, because once you think, a lot of the thoughts can be replaced. And if you think of the other side of the coin, if you will, and replace it, there's an effort that you're, you know, a positive effort that you can make that will, I would think, really help you get that other thought out of your mind.
Absolutely. I mean, I have a whole workbook in Says Who, which really gives you daily practices and daily worksheet of how to replace your negative thought, how to turn a negative thought into a positive thought and turn that positive thought into an action thought. I mean, I give you real tangible, concrete steps to what to do. So this becomes second nature for you, that releasing, replace, you know, it's the steps. It's being the observer. It's identifying your negative thoughts. It's doing the Seven Says Who questions. It's doing the release and replace. It's turning a negative thought into a positive thought that turns into an action thought that helps you realize your goal. I mean, these are very step-by-step steps that you can take, that it becomes a practice. You know, everything takes practice and takes discipline. You just have to be willing to commit to it. And I love your wet wrestler example, because that guy uses that consistently. That has become his mantra, his practice, his discipline. So what I want to say to people that are, you know, that are listening, or will be listening, that this take it step by step. But when you turn this into a practice, it works. You become so aware of your thinking process that you really start to take charge of it.
We're talking to Aura Nadrich today, the author of Says Who. Let's talk about some of the negative thoughts so that we, you know, we bring them out, and you mention a number of them in the book. Some of them are, I think are not intuitively obvious. One of them, of course, is fear, and that's probably the biggest one. Talk a little bit about how we can deal with that, with fear.
Well, fear is, you know, it's a universal feeling. We all have it in us. I think it's a very primal, primitive feeling. You know, we come from hunters and gatherers. We're used to being out in the wilderness trying to survive and, you know, hunt for food.
Fear could be good for a few things. I mean, if you're afraid to step in front of a moving bus,
exactly.
That's probably a good idea.
Exactly. So I do describe that in the book, the difference between logical fear. Yes, we need it. It's necessary. To when a fear turns into a belief and that can eat and it can paralyze our lives.
You're afraid to go out of the house because you're going to get hit by a bus.
Exactly. So those become a lot of what ifs and the hypotheticals. And I also mention in the book that, you know, I use hiking, you know, taking hikes into the canyons or the mountains, and there are snakes and, you know, animals there. You take somebody who's been on a hike, they encounter a snake, they get petrified, and they say to themselves, oh my God, I'm never going to hike again because I could see a snake again. Well, that's true. But if you take that fear and you let that fear again dominate your mind, you're never going to go hiking again. So you have to really turn it around and say, I am going to go hiking, and if or when I see a snake again, that may or may never happen again, I will deal with that accordingly. So you can see how a thought, which turns into a fear, can really dominate your life and actually paralyze you or stop you from doing things. Now, fear of flying is another real, very legitimate fear that a lot of people feel. And I say that fear may never go away, or that discomfort may never go away. But if you can use release and replace and use these things to say to yourself, like, you know, I'm really afraid of flying, but I really want to go to my child's graduation in New York City, and that's more important to me, and I will be fine. I may feel uncomfortable. I will do whatever I can to feel more comfortable on the flight. People, it's different things, but the desire, the need becomes greater than the fear. And that's really the positive. That's where you start to go into using positive thoughts, positive release and replace, which creates positive action. I mean, I have clients that have gotten on planes that have been, that didn't travel for 25 years.
Yeah, that is a common fear, but you're absolutely right. If you could overcome some of those, you can really change your life for the better.
Yes.
And you can do things that you couldn't do before.
Exactly.
It opens up a whole new world.
Exactly.
One of the things you said in the book is you talked about automatic thoughts. And a lot of people, myself included, don't think about automatic thoughts. Talk about automatic thoughts and how they can be negative.
Well, you just said a lot of people like yourself don't think about automatic thoughts because they're automatic. So
right.
We don't premeditate them. We don't, they just come about, just boom. And many of our thoughts are automatic thoughts. A good example of automatic thoughts is oftentimes when we're driving in the car. That's a great place where automatic thoughts come up because someone cuts you off in traffic. What comes up is an automatic thought. Oh, what an idiot. Or the other expletives that people say to themselves, you know, that's a perfect example of a thought that, boom, just comes up. Or you go into a new situation that you haven't been in before, a negative or an automatic negative thought can come up in a second. Oh, I don't like this person. Oh, this person is that. I don't want to do this, you know, and a thought can come up that dominates. So whether it's a thought that comes up very suddenly, and I use the driving example because a lot of road rage happens because of automatic thinking.
Yeah, right.
You know, what an idiot. I'm going to go after them. They're a menace to society. That's a real extreme example of how automatic thoughts take us over.
Yeah. Some of our negative thoughts are kind of on the subtle side, you know, and I put judgmental. Now, some judgmental thoughts aren't subtle at all, but some of them are, you know, we just look at somebody and we say, well, we classify them, whether by their clothes or their job,
yes,
or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely, David. And you know, what's a really kind of fun exercise, if anybody's up to doing it, is to say, you know what, I'm gonna do a little exercise. I'm going to note every automatic thought that I have today is to the best of my ability, that's judgmental, that's not kind, that's critical, that's mean, that's fearful. I mean, you know, if you can catch yourself, you walk into a situation, again, I talk about that in the book about judgmental thoughts. You can walk into a restaurant and a host or hostess is about to sit you down and boom, a negative thought about them, a judgmental thought of them just comes right into your mind. And again, be the observer. You walk into a party, you walk into a business meeting, you go on a date. I mean, we live in a time where the dating sites, the new dating apps are just huge. People go on a date, they walk into a restaurant. Of course, we're going to be judgmental. Let's be real. Judgmental thoughts come into play. It's part of the thinking process, just like negative thoughts are. But if you can observe it and you can note it and you can identify it, you might want to rethink that and start to work on, maybe for somebody who's super judgmental or super critical of themselves and of others. Once you become aware of that, you will be able to work with it and maybe become less of that type of person.
Yeah, that would certainly be the goal. And one of the things you say, which I think kind of goes along with this, is just you have to own your own thoughts. You have to you have to acknowledge to yourself how you're actually thinking and what you're doing and how you're viewing other people, for example, and judgmental.
Yes, yes. Identifying and owning. Owning is a big step to take towards really working through thoughts that you may not really love that you have. You know, it's like to be honest with ourselves, you know, for people to really come forward and say, you know what, I tend to be a pretty negative person, or I'm very judgmental. I mean, that's a wonderful step to take. That's owning the type of thoughts you have. And again, not to be, you know, it's counterproductive to not only own it, but then to criticize yourself in the process. Like, hey, I'm a negative person. Oh, that makes me really horrible. No, don't do that. But to come forward, whether you're honest or admitting it to yourself or even saying it to your partner, you know, people get into arguments and fights with one another and they accuse each other of those things. You're so negative. You're so critical. You're so judgmental. Do you know? It's like, these are things that are really helpful for us to realize about ourselves. And only then can we begin to change that. Do you know?
Yeah. Now, we just got a question from in the chat room about how do we stop thought from becoming reality? And we're kind of talking about that, but I guess it's step one is acknowledging your thought to start with.
Well, I think that whatever this, you know, to give you an example of that, whatever your thought is, look, thoughts are a million and one things. Thoughts are Christopher Columbus discovering America. Thoughts are, you know, Nikola Tesla. You know, thoughts are brilliant and create and invent amazing, brilliant things. I believe each and every one of us has the ability to create the most extraordinary things based on our thoughts. So if you have a thought that really excites you and inspires you, let's just look at this in a different way, not just about negativity. You can manifest that thought. That thought that lives in your mind's eye can live outside of it in an external reality. So if you have a question about, do I want to create this thought as a reality, or how do I stop it from becoming a reality? Do you want it to be your reality? I say in the book, we are the creators and masters of our inner dialogue, which creates our reality. What do you want that to be? What reality do you want to create based on your thinking?
Yeah, we are what we think. I think there's no question about that.
Right.
Feelings. Thoughts control our feelings.
Absolutely. And sometimes people feel it's the other way around. They're so plugged in and so triggered, and again, being the reactor, that they're with a feeling and an emotion, and they don't realize that that thought and that emotion is usually connected to a thought. Do you know? And sometimes people don't even know what it is connected to. So again, like if you're feeling really angry, let's just use that because that's a pretty hot feeling and emotion that can run through us. And sometimes, you know, people wake up and they're angry and they're agitated and they're anxious and they don't even know why. I say, again, when you're the observer and go and be able to talk to yourself, you know, it's okay, people, to talk to yourself. You don't have to talk out loud to yourself, but you can have an inner conversation and say, wow, I'm feeling really, you know, anxious. What's going on? What's making me feel so anxious? You know, and again, to be able to, you know, say, let me be with this. What thoughts can come up to the surface of my mind? What's making me feel so angry? What's making me feel so agitated? You know, if you really allow for that and you give yourself the time, just even, you know, 5-10 minutes, I mean, I think we can give ourselves that, to go, what's going on? What is making me feel this way? You will start to learn how to connect the dots for yourself, how to connect the thinking dots to the feeling and emotion that you're having. Now, sometimes it's not immediate, but rest assured that if you're feeling really a strong emotion or a feeling, there is a thought behind it, around it, buried in it, lurking somewhere. And if you really want to do that investigation, that inquiry, you'll get to the bottom of it so that you can let it go if you want to.
Yeah, it's really thinking about analyzing our thoughts.
It is. It really is. And you have to, again, be willing and wanting to change them. This doesn't work at all if you feel, I mean, and if people feel resistant to this, ask yourself what the resistance is. You know, let's use an example, David, if someone goes, oh, this sounds so great, but you know what? I don't believe it. Or, you know, this sounds so great. Ah, it's not going to work for me. That's your thought. That's your thought right there. I don't believe this. This isn't going to work for me. And if those two thoughts work for you, keep thinking them. Go for it.
You say that there's a lot of gold to mine in our thoughts.
Yes, definitely. Well,
talk about that.
Well, again, I mean, I think that we don't give ourselves as much credit as we can. I think that we are extraordinary human beings. We have this thinking mind, which I say is like having a Learjet. But you got to be the pilot. You got to know how to fly that thing. So we have so much to discover about our thinking mind. I mean, I don't even think we use, you know, I couldn't give it to you in percentages, but I think we're evolving. And quite rapidly, I think we're changing. I think there's a new thinking mind emerging. I think Says Who is proposing that. And so when I say to mind thoughts, you know, sometimes when we allow for our thoughts, you know, when I say try and release a negative thought and replace it with a positive one, your thought, it's like the stasis of thinking. It wants to be positive. It's like the body's natural state wants to be healthy. Our thinking mind wants to be healthy. So if we allow it, if we let ourselves be creative and be positive and work through the negativity in ways that I'm describing, you have so many other thoughts in your subconscious or even your unconscious that want to be known, that want to come to the foreground, that want you to tap into. It's like a well. It's like a reservoir. It's this, you know, I feel that thought is this endless ocean that just, it's there. And if we tap into it, it is like mining gold.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. One of your little statements in the book that was kind of almost a side segment, a quote from Buddha, and I'm kind of hooked on Buddha. I'm not a Buddhist, but I love some of the stuff he said.
Great guy, Buddha.
Amazing guy. And he said, or you quoted that he said, "You only lose what you cling to." And you know, when I think about that, you know, you can only lose what you think cling to. And
yeah.
And
yeah.
if things are, you know, you don't want them and you're clinging to them, then you can get yourself into a bad routine, if you will.
Exactly. And, you know, another thing, David, that I want to talk about, which is such a part of the, you know, I think we can all relate to this. You know, a lot of fear is of the unknown. And a lot of our thinking, you know, imagine if you've carried around a thought for a very, very, very long time, a thought about yourself. You know, I mean, negativity about oneself is part of the human condition. I think there isn't anybody out there that hasn't thought something really negative about themselves, starting with themselves, you know, if they really wanted to admit to it. And letting a thought go, which becomes a belief, you know, can be frightening to people because they've been thinking it for so long, or they're so comfortable being negative that they don't know any other way to be. And, you know, asking yourself pointed questions like, you know, does this work for me? Do I like it? To give ourselves permission to change our thinking, to change what has been so familiar. Thinking you're a bad person, thinking you're horrible, thinking you're inferior, thinking you're uncreative, thinking you're not good enough, thinking you're unlovable, thinking you're ugly, thinking you're stupid. I mean, that's a huge one. There are many, many people who have grown up thinking they're very stupid. I had a client who was a successful author, and he grew up believing he was stupid because of what was said to him as a child. And it took him many, many years and a lot of therapy. And then he did some actual aptitude testing to realize his intelligence was actually very, very high. So these are things that we tell ourselves, and the thought of giving it up, giving up what's familiar, even something that's caused you pain, that you've only known that, I can tell you that there's a whole other side of it. There's a whole other side of experiencing who you are. And I hope for people out there that are listening that you can experience it in your lifetime. We come into the world as these beautiful spirits, the pure essence, these souls that are perfect. Do you know, and unfortunately along the way on the life journey, we take on a lot of thoughts and a lot of beliefs about ourselves that are not who we were when we came into this world. Something to think about.
Yeah, I agree. You're a mindfulness teacher.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about mindfulness and how that can help us.
Well, mindfulness is being in the present moment with total awareness. Now, again, that sounds easy. Mindfulness is based on a 2,500-year-old Buddhist, bringing up our friend Buddha. It was originally a 2,500-year-old Buddhist practice. You do not have to be a Buddhist to be mindful. Mindfulness and being mindful is a quality that each and every one of us has. It's inherent in us. And what mindfulness proposes is to be present. You and I are having this conversation. We're in present time. I'm not thinking about what I'm going to have for dinner. I'm not thinking where I'm going to be at 5 o'clock. I'm not thinking about what happened yesterday. I'm with you, David, from moment to moment, for as long as this conversation lasts. I'm in the present with you. I'm right here, right now, nowhere else. Now, we don't live our lives like that for the most part, because we live our lives most often in every other moment but the present, one that we're in. So mindfulness is a practice, just like the Says Who is a practice, the method, and that is catching yourself when you're out of the moment, when you're doing five things at once and your wife or husband or partner or boss comes into the room and you answer them by not even looking up because you're so busy doing five other things. That's not mindfulness. That's being distracted. So when we're mindful, we're very present, and we're very present, we're very connected to ourselves, to the moment that's happening, to the experience that's happening, and to whoever we're interacting with. So what that means is we're really 100% there. And all of our senses are really alive and awake. And it's a way more magnificent way to go through all the moments of your lives. So if you think about it, being in the present moment, 60 seconds, how many 60-second moments do we have in a day, a 24-hour day? Thousands and thousands and thousands of them that we waste, that we just completely just disregard and toss away. Well, again, you know, fast forward to later on in your life when you don't have so many of those moments, you might want to really rethink wasting moments. So being mindful, again, is being in the present with total awareness. And if you can, with non-judgment, and you want to throw in some more bells and whistles, with self-love.
Yeah. If you're you point out, and it's pretty powerful, I think, because if you are in the fear mode or the worry mode, you're living in the future, because nobody fears the past.
Right.
And if you're regretful and probably depressed, you're living in the past, because
right.
Nobody regrets the future.
Right.
So you can look at your thoughts, and you can determine if you're in the moment, the future, or the past.
Exactly. That's right. And what I said, I just taught a meditation, a mindfulness class the other night, and I said, think about it. It's really kind of fascinating. If you think about the present moment that is existing right now, we're in it, right? So it's existing. We're living it. We're breathing. We're alive. We're in this moment. And yet, think of all the moments that we choose to be in that really don't exist anymore, or they haven't yet existed. Do you know? I mean, I know that sounds a little abstract, but, you know, you'd rather go back into a moment that has come and gone and go forward into a moment that doesn't yet exist, which I say can oftentimes put people in the worry zone. And, you know, by thinking about the future, or the sorry zone, about thinking about the past, well, why not be in the now zone? Like right now, people, like right now, be in this moment right now. You might really like it. It could be rather great. You right. might be surprised how much you actually could like it and enjoy it.
What are your, you know, you mentioned thought charts. What's a thought chart?
Well, it's part of the workbook that I have, and, you know, these are exercises that you can do. You might want to, if you want to be spontaneous, you could keep a little notepad near you, and you might want to write down a negative thought when it comes up and be aware of it. Again, mindfulness, being in present time awareness, knowing what's going on in that moment. Or at the end of the day, if you want to, you know, really write down some negative thoughts that you had during the course of the day, and that you know that it's like you've outed those thoughts, you've identified them, you now know what they are, you've written them down, you can look at them, you can see them with your own eyes. You know, sometimes thoughts come and go, a negative thought comes and goes, and it will come back again unless you dispel it or you work through it. So, you know, it's an exercise that one can use, do you know?
Yeah. So it would be negative thoughts that you put down, and I guess if it keeps reoccurring, in other words, you write it down a lot and you look back at over your other ones, you can say, boy, this one this is something I really need to deal with.
Kind right.
of brings it to your attention.
It's a thought that you can really, what I call workshop. You can work it. Like, I want to work this thought. I want to work through it. I want to replace it. I also go in the book about talking about two thoughts that cancel each other out, a negative a thought, putting two thoughts together in a sentence. I really want to get this job, but I know I'm not good enough. That right. will cancel out your desire. So when you write down your negative thoughts and you can put a positive thought next to it, which is really another part of the exercise, is you are noting, identifying a negative thought, and you could do two columns even. Here's, I really want to get a job. And instead of replacing it, instead of saying, but I don't think I'm good enough, I am good enough to get this job and I'm going to try. You know, start to learn how to support your desire with a positive thought to support it. You know, we cannot, we really can't meet our goals and we really can't support our desire with negative thoughts. You can't support it. Again, going back to your wrestler, it's so great because I use athletes in my book. I say, you know, athletes are a great example because they're going to win. They're going into a game to get that basket, to get that touchdown, to win that wrestling match. Their thoughts aren't going to, they're not going to go into the ring or go onto the football field and go, you know, I really want to make that touchdown, but I know I'm gonna drop the ball. Right. No athlete says that to themselves.
It won't happen. No question.
It's like it's logic, you know, and athletes are a great example of, you know, we watch them, you know, we're in awe of what we see them accomplish, but you can know with certainty that their thinking mind, when they go out, talk about looking at the bullseye and talking about positive thinking and the disciplined mind, you know, it's mind strength. Well, yeah. Each of us can develop that mental strength by doing the things that I'm talking about.
Right. Or we're out of time. We have, okay. Amazingly, our time has buzzed through. Where can our listeners find you?
Well, they can find me at auranadridge.com is my website. All of my social media handles are my name, Auran Adridge, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook is Ask Aura or a Life Coach. And, you know, my name, Auran Adridge.
Thank you so much for being with us. It's been a lot of fun and very informative.
Thank you so much, David, for having me.
Take care. Obtaining wisdom is a long process, as no one can bestow it on us. The more we talk and hear each other's ideas, the more we'll be able to mature our own views. Questions and answers from the chat room for today's shows and other shows will be posted on my website at davidgagan.com. Within probably either a few hours or a day or so. And you can ask other questions if you go directly to my website, and I'll answer those as well. Also, I cover all these subjects and many more in my book, The Endless Journey. I look forward to sharing our thoughts every Friday morning at 9 a.m. United States Eastern Time here on W4CY.com. You can also find all the old episodes on iHeartRadio at iHeart.com. Truth is indeed stranger than fiction, and it turns out to be an amazingly good news story. We all have a great destiny ahead of us. Let me leave you with one last thought. You are a unique spirit having a life experience. You are far more important in the grander scheme of things than you can possibly realize. Enjoy your life. You've earned it.